I'm very pleased to introduce Ed Marsh. I spent 6 years in the U.S. Army Reserves in infantry, and there were very few people that we looked up to, but one of the people that we did look up to with the U.S. Army Airborne Rangers. And the saying was, there's only two things that fall from the sky, and one of them are Airborne Rangers. And this is an Airborne Ranger who happened to go to Johns Hopkins University. He's a governance fellow of the National Association of Corporate Directors. He's a member of the Association for Corporate Directors. Ed is Chief Revenue Officer for Intent Data. He consults with middle market industrial manufacturers on topics of strategy and revenue growth. And Ed, I'd like you to talk also about the work you're doing for American Express as well. Ed is deeply involved in the Boston area marketing technology community. Much of his recent work focuses on creating tech-enabled business growth engines for privately held companies in the manufacturing area. But tell us a little also about your American Express work as well.
So American Express is one of my clients. My title is Export Advisor to American Express. They have a program they developed to try to help small and middle market companies sell more internationally. And they've strategically partnered with the U.S. Department of Commerce to run programs in conjunction with them. And so my role in that capacity is to advise on the topics they should be talking about and kinds of programs they should run and people that we could have come speak at the events and that sort of thing.
Okay. So would you lead us through this case?
Absolutely. I guess we'll convene the meeting with a rather large board. Hopefully it's not an unwieldy one. Hopefully we'll be able to make some headway. Let me start by saying the good news is that we're not dealing with a crisis. I mean, all too often we convene to deal with some kind of a problem. We're not, but I worry that we potentially may be. And when you look at the kind of the core factors, I think I would frame it that this company that we all know so well brings incredible rigor to their manufacturing operations and research and development. And we can contrast that very starkly with the rigor that they bring to their business development. And that really is at the crux of this. But to run down a litany of issues that we've all discussed on a number of occasions, the forecasting is unreliable, the sales are unpredictable, the competitors are taking bold steps to really experiment with different business models, and we're not doing it. There's likely to be a slowdown. We're exposed to fluctuations and a drop in capital investment. We've asked respectively on a number of occasions for more insight into what's being done to proactively grow sales, what those levers are that people know they need to pull and how they'll pull them, to what magnitude and what situations. And instead, we're just kind of wallowing. And so that's brought me to the point that I think we need to have this serious conversation. And I guess it raises a couple issues. Number one, can Lewis ever actually drive the strategic growth that's necessary? Because he loves doing the R&D so much, but does he have the vision? Can he do it? And then secondarily, clearly Jackson, from our experience last month, is pretty focused on just doing what he's comfortable doing. And Lewis has had the opportunity to address that, and it seems to me he's made his choice. He's addressed it in the way he thought was appropriate, which is to not address it. And so that kind of brings us to this point where it's not up to us to manage sales, but it's up to us to manage Lewis. And he's not managing sales. So what do we do?
Can I ask a question?
Please.
As a new board member, I just want to base it for my, this is a family-owned company. I'm going to assume it's 100% owned by some group of family members. What are their goals? For example, are their goals simply to get dividend paychecks and therefore their focus is on cash generation? Is it on long-term profitable growth, if you will? I mean, what's driving our shareholders?
The family would like to get out of the business, basically. The idea is to move toward some kind of a liquidity event. You know, the timeframe is not specified at this point. Maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years. But the goal is not to just hold this forever.
So is it fair to think that, based on what you just said, is that in order to maximize the value of the company, the board or the owner of the company have to demonstrate to the future buyers that they have process in place and they know what's going on, and it's not just the past that speaks for us, it's the future that's gonna happen.
Correct, absolutely. Or we end up in a very, you know, unfavorable sort of a transaction, a distressed transaction or something.
I hear two things repeatedly from folks in this business. One, our customers are very different from all the other industries, which always fascinates me, but that's a red flag. And the other is, this is a sales problem. And while there is a sales problem, to me it's a manifestation of our market is changing and we're fighting to change. And we don't want to tell anybody it's changing because we're not asking. And until we get our arms around that change and understand that this is not a seasonal thing, this is a structural change to the world, and we either go with it or we die. Those are broader concerns that I have, because this isn't a let's play with some levers and I'm going to get it going. Anybody who's in the tech business, if you were building capital equipment and selling on-prem stuff, software, hardware, whatever, the world is moving away from that inexorably. And you either get out of the business or you've got to figure out how to change to do it, because the market's not going to wait for anything. And so that's my takeaway so far. I'm also a new board member, but it's like, okay, geez, everybody's different here right now. Really? Okay.
Elaine?
I see it somewhat differently. I see it as a cultural issue, which is somewhat traditional for family businesses, and for businesses that have grown to a certain point, there's always, it seems, one legacy person who's in a key position, where loyalty clouds everybody's vision, and that person becomes an obstacle to growth. But because of the loyalty, because of the culture, because we have to treat him right, the view of that person is seen as sacrosanct, and that person becomes a sacred cow. And when outsiders come in and point that out, then they become wrong, because the CEO typically doesn't want to be disloyal and listen to the people that aren't part of the culture yet, which is typically the board. And so the challenge becomes, how do you address the cultural impasse and the loyalty impasse and the recognition that by listening to Jackson forever, that the value of the company will be hurt and the sale that they envision their exit strategy won't work without attacking Jackson.
But of course, behind that is the challenge that right now it's okay. I mean, sales are okay. We can't say why. We can't say if they will be, but right now they're okay.
Well, it's sort of, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But they're not looking at the long term. They're looking at the immediate, and they're clouded by loyalty.
Paul, you had your hand up?
Yeah, you just said sales are okay. In my first read through it, my impression was sales are not okay.
Revenue's okay.
Because, you know, your prospects, your prospective backlog looks pretty opaque.
Right.
This guy Jackson, the sales leader, does he report to Lewis, the owner?
Yes.
Are they the only two players in this? Because it seems to me other people on the leadership team ought to have more curiosity about why some of these deals aren't closing, why some of them are disappearing. It would be wise if I guess Lewis could talk to someone in engineering. Why don't you partner up with the salespeople, go with them on some of these prospects, so we get some other eyes and ears on what's happening. Jackson seemed far too autonomous to me.
Craig?
So I've been in recurring revenue before, and I think part of this, following along where Robert was, is that you're afraid to change this, you're afraid to make the salesman go through the change. And you, because it'd be disruptive, you lose salesmen, et cetera. But right now you're being robbed of your analytics. You don't know what data, if they would complete this, the CRM information.
Yes.
as a requirement before they got the commission. I mean, start putting in conditions like that, maybe make it sweetener, put a sweetener in it so it's really painless the first 6 months. But I think the compensation, as I read this, I saw it as a one of the elements is a compensation issue.
I see it as people being afraid, clearly afraid to change and to look into the world and see what's happening. You know, and one idea as I was reading it was, can they sort of set up a separate business that uses more of a subscription model and sort of as a test to show this guy Jackson that they aren't, that there are other ways to do business here, to show him that, you know, if we try it, you know, not $1 million, you know, investment, but that they try it to show that in this marketplace, this is maybe a good way to sell the product. Not take away from him, but show him something else.
Maybe to draw on what Craig was saying, is that, you know, it seems to me there's precious little information about the market. Some fundamental questions would be, okay, who are we competing against? What's the market share? What are their revenue streams? You know, it's like really be analytical, and you know, when you bring it to bear, there may be this aha moment, because you know, it seems to me that everybody's playing blind here.
I was going to suggest that because it's a tech company and they're used to constantly changing what they have to deliver to meet the market, that you could use that as a lever to get people thinking about how the market has changed and treat it as a hypothesis to test. So maybe create a sales scum works instead of a product development scum works to use the subscription model and just have one person in there selling with a commission that would be comparable to selling product and let the race begin.
Do you think a salesperson would be enough, or would it have to be a multidisciplinary skunk works? I mean, would you have to have someone from engineering, somebody from finance, in order to try to really suss it out?
From what I know about the product here, it sounds like they could sell the same product differently.
A different revenue model.
So just a monthly fee instead of paying up front. And if they start with one person, the big capital requirement to completely switch over goes away. So I think they could measure a separate P&L.
Cash flows are very different.
The cash flows are significantly different from the subscription versus the capital, because I send an invoice for $1 million, I get paid, I get $1 million in the bank. If this is a subscription model, it's $10,000 a month. Mm-hmm. This really monkeys with the whole operation and my cash flow. So I think that the idea of separating something could be a way to go, but I think that this is a very different business and they do not want to go in this direction, at least the CEO.
I would advocate multidisciplinary, because I think the whole organization is kind of out of touch with the market, you know, sort of today.
And you think it would be possible to call those people from existing employees, or would that require search to find the right folks to be part of that skunk works?
Well, I think
I like cross.
I tend to agree with you. This is a process issue. It really is, and I think the issue is that you can basically wave, you know, these processes and solutions in front of people. I'm on the farmer side, so I don't deal with this part. But what I do learn on that side is that what you try to do is you say, have a metric, set it in advance, and see if you succeed or don't succeed. And if you don't succeed, you can basically then actively decide that you're going to still continue doing something like that. But I think the first issue on this is really process. You probably have a CEO who likes his job, likes his office, and maybe doesn't want to sell things and is happy just tooling along that way. Maybe that's what it is. But to come in with anything radical at this point, I think even like these small pilot programs are probably going to fail, because no one's going to really want them to succeed. And then they'll say, you know, you see, I told you so. So
culture.
I think this is a process cultural issue where you're going to have to basically say, all right, set a goal that we all want to achieve next quarter, next month, wherever you want to do something like that. And then say, if you do that, keep on going. And if not, start asking some hard questions.
And I saw Kevin's hand up, but real quick, what would an example of that goal be? I mean, what might that sound like?
You know, set a revenue projection, a sales projection, you know, new clients, anything that you want to do that way that basically is a challenging area, and say, this is what you want to do. They say they're all these big deals. You say, okay, by next month, next quarter, what's a realistic number of deals you're going to land? And have somebody basically say, you don't have to make it a stretch to fail, say you don't. And if you do that, you're off to the you know, and everybody says, well, then it ain't broken, don't fix it. But if they don't make it, at least at that particular point, ask the hard question.
So you're suggesting that as a way to break the logjam of this loyalty?
I think you need a hard, I think you need a hard number, and I think you need to get people to commit to up front that if A, I do this, and if B, I have to basically start answering some, ask some hard questions.
Kevin?
But isn't the issue that the people who have to change to drive that are the ones who are opposed to it?
Yeah. Well, that's why I think a non-threatening way to do it in terms of, say, let's just have a hard metric. Let's have a number.
And rehearse on the excuses that you can easily anticipate. I mean, prepare for those. We'll get around here in a second. Kevin had his hand up for a while.
I think at the end, this does come to a CEO owner's want or willingness to change more than any other thing. I suspect the level beneath that, the play might be on the technology side, which is somehow comfortable to them if the company's basis is the best engineering, the best manufacturing, so on, the product. There's indication here that the product has to be different. More on the information side, there's discussion about food traceability, organic validation, aggregating data for other advisory decisions. Those are different than things in or on or at the machine that may not exist in the company, but could be very powerful adjuncts. So it might not be that there has to be any discussion about stopping or changing per se, but it seems like there's a critical need to bring in some other technology, some services perhaps, some ability to speak to, develop business, sell, and support that would be a multiplier to what the company has enjoyed pretty successfully.
But of course, before that investment could be made or that commitment of resources, somebody would have to say, yes, we're going to try this.
Well, there has to be a curiosity to explore and create a business model that suggests that that's a good thing to do, and then a backbone to say maybe we've got to carve some resources and move them. But at the end, it feels like that's got to be the CEO owner's decision. And if there's not a healthy paranoia or a curiosity for learning about what changes are coming, it's something to think about another way.
Elaine, we'll scoot right back around to you, but Brian's had his hand up for a while.
Well, I always go back to think customer. And right now, it's very unclear as to what is the problem we're looking to solve here. It's opaque. And we're throwing darts in the air. But if we can first figure out what is the unmet customer need that we're trying to solve for, and therefore develop the KPIs or the working hypothesis that says, okay, based upon that, we're going to go this direction, we're probably going to have a better likelihood of involvement and ownership and openness to change. But right now, there's not that clear, okay, what's the problem we're looking to solve and based upon what?
So we're fretting about revenue and business models. But like somebody over here mentioned, we don't have a clear vision of what the current market situation is.
Yeah, or what's the pain point for our customer.
Right.
Is somebody else fulfilling that much better, much more efficiently, much more effectively than what we're doing? There's innuendo, there's something here that's suggesting that, but again, we still don't know the specifics around what are the unmet customer needs, pain points that we're not able to address in our existing business model. Therefore, what's the hypothesis we need to prove or disprove? How would we go forth to try and determine that and execute upon that to gain the support of the board as well as the owners, etc.
All right, so Elaine and then Mike.
So to the point about customer, to me the question becomes how do we co-opt Jackson? And part of that, if he is indeed the VP of sales and marketing, he should care about customer. So the question is what will motivate him to listen to better serve his customer, and if it can be wrapped in something that makes him a hero as opposed to displaces him, which is I'm sure what he's worried about. And if indeed he cares about customer, then that becomes the hook. Because until you do something with him, everything's gonna stop. So it's the issue of co-optation and what the right hook is. Customer should be the right hook for the head of sales and marketing. And the minute you get him on board, then everything changes.
Mike?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a culture problem within the company because the paragraph that introduces Tim Jackson talks about everybody working on huge deals, and they also talk about the disconnect between understanding the transition that's going on in the landscape, and their perception of it. And I think in the first instance, this doesn't point to directly a sales force failing, but rather, to my mind, a management failing. The first line of information about what's going on out there is your sales force. And these guys, believe me, if they've been doing it as long as I suspect these guys have been doing it, they know it all. But they're operating totally on a transaction mentality and not a relationship mentality. And that's the reason that they miss the value of this kind of information within the firm. And their management, whether it's senior sales management or marketing management, I'd be curious, for instance, where did they come up with the idea of the short private label runs? Seems like a pretty clever thing to have diagnosed about what's going on in the market. Probably came from some aspect of the sales force activity. But has management really thought about the process that they need to have in place to make this non-anecdotal and not a kind of a black swan event, or in this case, a white swan event?
So very much this competitive and market understanding that's come up a couple cases, Ellen?
Well, it's all out there, but the guys pulling the levers that nobody understands which to pull,
right,
or the guys not pulling any levers. And I thought this was a very interesting point here about the transition to a different compensation model if you want to change the business from a product business to a service business. And who should be, you know, percolating that idea? Again, you know, the executive suite. What's going on up there?
Ellen and then Ben.
Okay. So a lot of great points by my colleagues. But I want to come back to the culture, because at the end of the day, if we want change, one, we have to know what we're trying to change to, but two, it starts at the top. And so it comes back to what's going to motivate that CEO in order to motivate the rest of the team, whether it's sales, marketing, or whomever. And what if our CEO isn't willing or can't change? Because it could be he tries, but he can't. And so my real fundamental question actually is, let's say we come to the conclusion over the next X period of time that our CEO cannot get the team to change through whether it's compensation, whether it's through using different techniques and ideas, even maybe bringing in a new sales guy, whatever. Maybe the CEO is not capable or willing to change, and is the family, the backbone of our family owners, going to support a change, or will they simply, they so in love with this, because I went through this, so in love with the guy that if he's not willing to change, it's okay. So.
Fair question. Ben?
Actually, you took the words right out of my mouth. You know, I'm a firm believer that comp plan drives behavior.
Yes.
So I think the Jackson problem is relatively easy to fix, right? Because we can relatively, right?
If you can,
right? My main concern is let's assume we do get Jackson on board and he drives the change down without Lewis's buy-in and having him on board for this, and I'm not sure how to fix that problem.
Mm-hmm. Kathy?
It's a huge cultural issue. I agree with Ellen. I don't know if the CEO can change, maybe willing, but can he change? That's for the family to determine. The sales guy is also very troubling to me. Need some accountabilities there, and I think Greg laid some out as well as over here with compensation. He needs to be held accountable for leading that sales organization. If Lewis can't do that, somebody has to do that. Got a lot of sales folks reporting it to this guy. He's not
Michael?
Doing his job.
Yeah. I think there's a considerable contrast between Tim and Lewis, and I guess I would boil it down to two words. With Tim, I'm perceiving here a bit of an attitude problem, if I have to boil it down. There are a lot of excuses. Are people too busy to use the CRM? Really? Our industry is different, right? Like these are smoke screens for not changing. But I was thinking with Lewis, it may not just be that he can't. It may be that he doesn't yet have the insight. So it may be he hasn't, you know, there's this, we've been talking about how he doesn't seem to see it. So his backbone might be stiffened by a really clear sense of the direction of the nature of our product, and that things are going to shift toward the subscription model, like it or not. And I think our first line of action is probably to help Lewis to see it.
There's a couple,
CEO can't see effectively.
So a couple folks haven't jumped in yet. Carl, Nessarine?
I think that it is a process issue. And I think that if the management is not looking at the data to make decisions, they don't understand the strategy that for a company that you need to capture data, and then you need to look at the data, and then based on that, make their strategic decision. Now, if the people that report to the CEO don't understand that they don't understand the value of the data, we cannot change that. I think the best way is to bring somebody from outside, have them define the KPIs for the organization, and see if they can go and capture that from whatever data they currently have, that they have captured, and then show them how that can help in the future in their decision making. That way, you know, you have not stepped on any of the people. You have somebody bringing from outside, or, you know, getting the data, presenting the data in a way that you have not seen before. And also, you need that if you want to sell the company. You need to have something like that, so you can bring that person to serve those two purposes.
You're recommending a consultant or bringing in a new employee?
No, consultant.
Okay, Carla.
I think I agree with everyone around the table that said that this is a cultural issue. I'm going to respectfully disagree about the consultant, right? Because we're, as a new board member, I'm seeing the CEO's inability to change and not accepting the unsolicited advice being given to him by a fellow board member. So I don't see that bringing in a consultant would really change anything.
Right.
But I do think that to the extent that we're able to kind of bring the CEO around, and also work on Tim's behavior. I think that we only make out some platform.
And I think Chris and Frederick, we haven't heard from you two yet, have we?
Who? Me first?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. So I want to, it reminds me situation I faced recently, in fact, having some immovable object and the way I would probably like to go is first validate, having a validation, and I will assume it's done, but between the mandate of the board, between the board and the owners, you know, what is it that we are trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. What do you want us to accomplish as a board? Let's suppose we are aligned on that. Now that we are aligned on that, so I'm sure the board is not the only one to think like that, because for me it's pretty clear. There is no doubt, like Brian was mentioning. Buyers were changing. We need to go to the subscription model. That's the problem. We need to change. And I'm pretty sure if we start to play the transparency and the purpose, basically those two axes, within the employees of a company, we'll find relays of people who think like that, just think the same. Yes, we do need to change, I'm sure. And try to create leverage from those people to support the idea. And after the challenge is really how, and I like what you said, we need to get team on board as well. So we need to find a way, and maybe one way would be, okay, let's see at the clients that we have, you know, we have past clients and future clients, let's say, current prospect that we're working and the future one. On each of those, how are we gonna address the change? If we have to change, how are we gonna sell to a client that we used to sell on the capital expenditure? Good news, you've paid $1 million for this machine, great. Starting tomorrow, you're gonna pay $10,000 a month on top. So how do you do that? So, but probably it's a challenge that team is facing today. If you want me to change, how am I going to do that? Well, I don't know how to sell it, and I think that's what needs to be helped on.
All right, so we're going to have to come to some conclusions here. Is there anybody we have not heard from yet? All right, so what I've heard is two very strong themes, one around culture and one around process. And kind of the third theme that I think I've heard is lack of consensus on strategy and what the market expects. So we've got to somehow reconcile this culture versus process piece, but then we also, it sounds to me like we have to have a plan for how we can make sure that the owners and the board are synced up, that there's a clear strategy, and that strategy is used as a foundation for really substantial market research, so that we're not just, you know, guessing or sticking a finger in the air, but we're making sure that the potential skunk works or potential changes in key players or whatever are built around those foundational pieces. Is that a fair synopsis of where we've come to?
And I think there's one other thing. Assuming we could start to get them in the right direction. We have an organization of some number of 100 people that's been doing the same thing for a long time. I may want to change, but the ability to be able to get there in a reasonable way without too many stumbling blocks and without running out of money is a big deal. So I think the talent down the road in the not too distant future is going to be a really big deal for us. And it's not just compensation and a change of leadership. My experience with sales leaders over the years, I love them, but they're tellers. They don't ask. And I'm certainly not asking my customers, I'm telling them what they want. So that's a big deal in my experience, and I think that, not that I may not necessarily want to replace this guy, but I think there's gonna be significant talent gaps, and if I'm gonna get this business to a place where I can have a good exit at some multiple, I'm gonna need to get with the market and stay with the market, and that might not be under the head of sales. But there's gonna be other things associated with subscription model and financing that and operational aspects and a whole bunch of other things that I think will be big gaps for us, if, assuming we can get the CEO on board. So that's a big issue that. in my opinion.
All right, so quickly from John, and then we're gonna develop the plan.
So I don't think the issue is process or culture by themselves. I think the problem is purely leadership, which leads to the culture problem and the process problem. And we need to focus on getting the CEO to show more leadership to implement the vision that the board's creating here through this discussion. And if he can't provide that leadership, then we have the basis to take some action. But if we make it a leadership issue, we're more empowered to do it. If we make it a cultural process, I think we'll be running in circles.
All right, so clearly at this point, we'd have to begin the work of trying to identify, you know, how we actually have these conversations with the CEO and who's responsible for the different pieces of what the priorities are, what the resource allocation is. But if I understand correctly your model, Larry, this is kind of where we break, and then just kind of talk about the process that we've been through, right? So let me just start by giving you a little bit of background. I mean, this is the world in which I live. I wear several different hats, but primarily I'm a consultant to lower and middle market industrial manufacturers, often in the capital space, often privately held, although there's a niche that I have with U.S. subsidiaries of German companies because I was partners with one, I'm married to one, I understand a lot of the cultural issues very well. And
married
so,
to a subsidiary?
One of the things that I routinely talk to, whether it's the U.S. president, U.S. CEO, or GM, or whoever, and the German owners and management, is that we're going to, I mean, I've seen this movie before, we're going to move through this process where what they think is they have is a marketing problem, and then they're going to realize that they've got a sales problem, and then they're going to realize that they've got a complete absence of understanding of the market, and they've got a strategy problem, and there's no way, in my experience, to force that last piece until some of the awareness develops about the first pieces, because they're not willing to entertain those bigger, pricklier issues until first there's some credibility that comes with having predicted that we'd hit the first couple stages, and second, they don't understand the magnitude of the problem they have and the urgency to fix it until they've started to uncover some of those other issues along the way. So that's the background that I approach this from, and I'm interested to hear people say that, I mean, obviously you've encountered this and you've talked about the times you've seen this sort of thing, and Brian lives in the digital world that's completely transitioned to subscriptions, and I'm sure that he's encountered along the way, a lot of angst from people that are trying to make that transition. So that's one piece of kind of my outlook on how I approach this. The other piece is that in addition to all the international work that I've done, I started and ran a company in India. I've done a lot in Nigeria and Brazil, and I know Craig through the International Executives Resource Group, and that ties in with my Amex work. But there's also a lot of digital stuff. The Boston digital marketing community is pretty dynamic. And I've actually recently started another business around intent data. And intent data, for anybody that isn't familiar with it, third-party intent data means the ability for us to observe actions anywhere on the internet that indicate to us that a B2B buyer is in the process of taking actions, researching, and preparing to buy a product or service that you sell. So it's incredibly powerful stuff, particularly because we do the third-party data in a way where we can identify who the actual contact is, as opposed to anonymous account-level third-party ID, which is the ubiquitous solution that's been available to this point. And so in that life, I deal much more with tech companies and SaaS companies, although some industrial companies try to adapt that solution too. And so I've got this opportunity to kind of watch from a high level the differences in culture. And I'll offer one final comment from that background. One of the things that I often speak to industrial companies about is that if we really wanted to think about how to grow the business, we'd look at companies that are under intense pressure to grow from investors, that are funded, that have to figure out how to grow. And this model that we have for industrial marketing and sales developed in an entirely different time. And there are very smart people that have developed incredibly refined engines for revenue growth with marketing from a number of different dimensions, and SDRs and BDRs and inside sales and AEs and channel management, all these tools that industrial manufacturers have the opportunity to adopt. Sure, the scale is different. You can't build a million-dollar machine as fast as you can spin up another software license, but you can certainly pick more profitable clients or pick the sectors that you want to work on instead. So it's from that combined background, those different perspectives that I have, that this case came and kind of where the discussion came from. So thoughts about the process we went through, the conclusions we reached? Do we want to have a knockdown drag out about culture versus process? What do we want to do with our... Well, what happened is we reached the point, I think, where what we heard was there needs to be a very clear consensus.
What happened in real life? Is this a real life problem?
Oh, no, this is an amalgamation of various ones.
Right. I thought it was my client. wouldn't we go back to the leadership issue? Because we're the board. We've dropped off down into, what is it, nose in, fingers out. We've gotten very technically oriented here. So the real issue is supporting the CEO, get him to see what needs to be, see that he needs to make some change, and helping him, because we've become very, we've gotten our hands in it too much.
But I think
if this was an actual board, I would think we've already crossed that.
Didn't I hear a precursor to that, though, that we can't give the CEO more specific direction until we're clear that the board and the ownership has synced up on the strategy and direction.
We should bring it back to the board. We should be supportive of him, tell him here's what we think, maybe, but he should be the one taking action with his management team.
But what action is he taking? I guess that's, I think, one of the gaps that we identified is there's not a clear vision that's shared by the owners and the board. And so I'm not sure we're clear exactly. But yeah, but if
maybe one thing we heard was time flies very fast. So we have no more time to waste. So keep people accountable. I think we have heard it several times. Define KPIs, especially on the sales, okay? 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, we want to see how many, which one you're gonna sell. And if you sell them, tell me how you did it. And if you didn't, that means it's not working. And if you sell somebody else, great, but it's not answering the problem. Where does this somebody else is coming from? So at least you put team and the sales team in front of a real challenge. Guys, we don't know what's happening to us.
But
I know it's
fictitious. What are the KPIs?
Sorry?
What are the KPIs? Who defines the KPIs? So if the CEO and the sales and marketing head are not aware of KPIs and data and what they need to capture, they don't know what to capture. So that's why the KPI, that's why my suggestion was to bring somebody who understands this and suggest to the CEO, this should be your KPIs.
I think you could go back to the sales pipeline and put KPIs in the data that they're already looking at that's not very.
I'm not sure that I hear that management identified, says it's, you know, realized there's a problem. That's.
Yeah, I mean.
And until you get to that particular point, then the board, or if it sounds like it's an individual member, the way you kind of put it that way, is basically, you know, someone just throwing cold water on what is clearly a successful, you know, successful company.
So what I was trying to say is you can't go to KPIs until you know what your strategy and what you're really aiming at. So you got to have alignment between management, the board, and the owners, the family, what is our goal, which is why I asked the question.
And that's where I was going. I know
and
it's
then
fictitious.
The KPIs,
yeah,
all this other stuff follows.
I know it's
right?
fictitious, but I go and I support Ellen's thinking. You mentioned, and you just planted a seed, what's the end play here? Well, we'd like to sell a company. Okay, do we want to do
why
that today, or do we want to do it in 5 years?
Question.
And it may be beneficial to do it today, while it's not as transparent as to how problematic the company is.
That's an interesting point.
We'll sell today, we're in the hands, we're two in the bush.
Right.
And it's aligned with the owners anyway, so let's just go do that. Let's have the executives cash out, and everybody goes home happy.
Actually, that's the motivating factor. Basically,
well,
what you say, and that would bring someone else in. If you say, we're going to sell the company, let's bring someone in to say what it's worth.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden someone says, well, if you're just doing it this way, the way you've been doing it, it's worth this much. But if you change things, it's worth
yeah.
this
well,
much.
Your earlier point that the CEO and perhaps the broader ownership group admitting there's a problem, or there's at least one looming on the horizon, is kind of step one to make progress, because the momentum prevents doing anything in this circumstance.
Well,
and it's teed up at the beginning. The deals are always pushing out. They're always a quarter from closing. And many of the big deals are just not materializing for no reason we understand.
Well, that
ought to be a clear sign that something has changed or something bad's going on that's not yet understood. Somebody ought to speak to that.
But I think what Dan's suggesting
is the excuse is that if you're going to say, okay, you want to sell the company, fine. Let's find out what we're worth. We'll bring in somebody independent to say what it's worth. If they come in and they say it's worth more than you thought, then everybody's happy and you sell it that way. But if they come in and say, it's only worth this much, why is that?
Mm-hmm.
I say, well, it's because you
have not doing all the
and
right
that would
steps,
be basic.
Right.
That's the way to identify the problem if that if the end point's that.
We've got 5 minutes.
I think this independent director who's kind of the narrator has a big role to play here if he or she wants to. This person could be the change agent.
His suggestion was resign.
to get the strategic look about what's really important, the value of the company, the direction, got to galvanize the board. He's kind of on the fence, you know, as the narrative is written. So I would recommend he go all in and be a change agent and try to galvanize the board. And if that can happen, good, there's a chance. If not, then he should, you know, maybe resign and as a gesture of a warning.
Rather than fight the tide, I'm a firm believer people manage their incentives. So the board's incentive, the owner's incentive, are we aligned? And if it is, hey, we want to have an exit, then that's where you've got commonality. So let's work with that, and therefore let's point that out.
And I think
that's
Dan,
where there's no resistance.
And so Dan's saying you
resistance to changing how we go to market, resistance to our business model changes, but there's probably no resistance to selling.
Unless the incentive is the path of least resistance, and that's what they're living out right now. Complacency is working for them.
2 years ago, I went through a change of ownership with a company that bought the company I was with. They're an old line company that deploys phone systems on-prem. They wrote a pretty big check for the company that I was working for that happened to have a big Cisco franchise. They bought it with the belief that this is just going to keep going. The value of this business has, while their top line has done okay, the value of this business, it's like a piece of fruit that sat in the bowl too long. It's not going to get better. And the challenge for this is less associated with when do I do it. It's what am I trying to achieve? If the exit for this business, want to do evaluation, but I also want to find out what are the people in this business doing, what's happening, and what kind of valuations are they seeing, and what might I look at going forward? Because this might be, this is time to do this in the next 6 months because it's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And if I'm a $240 million business, and let's say I want to sell in 3 years, subscriptions is not going to replace half my revenue. It's going to be a fraction.
Yeah.
It's not going to help this business appreciably, in which case I may be better off getting out as quickly as I can and going and doing something else, go live in a beach, whatever it is, because this isn't going to get better.
Well, and the risk to execute is very, very high.
Right.
So again, if we're aligned in, hey, we'd like to have an exit, then let's pursue that. Let's uncover various things, but we're doing it in a backdoor move as opposed to, hey, let's take on culture, let's take on process. And it's just a suggestion to consider. But I know it's fictitious. Too bad. I'd love to hear it. Now you know the rest of the story.
This might be a good time to stop. Thank you very much for
my
presenting
pleasure.
This
Thank
case.
You.
Next month, Elaine is going to be presenting a case that's based on her book, Betrayed. And I hope to see you. Please stay and continue to schmooze. And there's plenty of things to eat, and look forward to seeing you next month.
Every month.